This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. A lot of writers find that nothing brings out their insecurities more than facing a blank page. Anne Lamott has managed to hold on to her insecurity in spite of her bestsellers. This combination of success and self-doubt leaves her in a good position to give empathic advice to other writers. There's plenty of advice in her book Bird by Bird, some instructions on writing and life. She's taught writing at the University of California at Davis and at writing conferences throughout the state. Lamott is the author of four novels, as well as the best-selling memoir Operating Instructions about the first year of her son's life. Maybe you remember her commentaries on Fresh Air about her life as a single mother. After the publication of Bird by Bird, we asked her to read from the beginning of the chapter about first drafts.
All good writers write really lousy first drafts. This is how they end up with good second drafts and terrific third drafts. People tend to look at successful writers, writers who are getting their books published and maybe even doing well financially, and think that they sit down at their desk every morning feeling like $1 million, feeling great about who they are and how much talent they have and what a great story they have to tell. That they take in a few deep breaths, push back their sleeves, roll their necks a few times to get all the cricks out, and dive in, typing fully formed passages as fast as a court reporter. But this is just the fantasy of the uninitiated. I know some very great writers, writers you love, who write beautifully and have a great deal of money, and not one of them sits down routinely feeling wildly enthusiastic and confident. Not one of them writes elegant first drafts. All right, one of them does, but we do not like her very much. We do not think that she has a rich inner life, or that God likes her or can even stand her. Although when I mentioned this to my priest friend Tom, he said you can safely assume you've created God in your own image when it turns out that God hates all the same people you do.
That's Anne Lamott reading from her new book, Bird by Bird, Some Instructions on Writing and Life. And you have a really nice observation about writing and then editing what you've written. You say writing is about hypnotizing yourself into believing in yourself, getting some work done, and then unhypnotizing yourself and going over the material coldly. Are you afraid that if you started writing without letting, you know, the more uninhibited part of you come out, or without like hypnotizing yourself into believing in yourself, that you would be choked by the editor in you?
Oh, definitely. And it's not just the editor, it's that raging voice of perfectionism inside of me that is terrified that I will make a mistake and disgrace the entire family. I always believe that perfectionism is the voice of the oppressor. It's not the voice of creativity or encouragement. It's the enemy of the people. And so I know that if I hold myself to good writing, I'll never get anything done.
Do you find that if you are in a more confident mood, you're going to write any better than if you're feeling particularly insecure?
Definitely. But I don't sit down in a confident mood. I need to arrive at a confident mood. And the way that I do that is by wearing down the voices of dread and self-loathing and grandiosity and all of the appearances that mental illness makes at any given day at the typewriter.
Well, now, how do you do that? That's easier said than done.
Well, I don't want to sound like a sneaker commercial, but you just do it. You know, you show up and you suit up and you sit down. And I just assume now that I'm going to have 20 minutes of heavy aerobic exercise at the desk. You know, I'm going to sit down. I'm going to get up. I'm going to think of phone calls I absolutely have to make. I'm going to sit down. I'm going to suddenly start to worry if maybe this one mole is beginning to look a little iffy. And I'll go check that out. Then I'll sit back down and I'll start to write. And it will be a very bad sentence. So I'll exit out. And suddenly I'll start to wonder whether or not it's too late for me to get orthodontia. So then I'll get up and I'll look in the mirror and I'll see if my teeth really do need work. And then I'll sit back down. And I just let myself do it. I mean, first of all, I burn off a lot of calories. And second of all, I burn off a lot of nervous energy. And then I get back down to the two principles of which I'm sure, which is, first of all, that you take really, really short assignments. And the second idea is that I let myself write really terrible first drafts. So I just have to wear it down every single day all over again.
The last time we spoke, after your book Operating Instructions came out about your son's first year of life, you talked about jealousy and what a jealous person you are. And I imagine, boy, it's so easy to get jealous when you're writing on a day when you don't like what you're writing and you're thinking about friends who write much better than you think you're writing that day. D- Does jealousy interfere ever with writing for you? And does it interfere with friendships with other writers?
Well, mostly the writers I'm close to are doing a lot better than I am. Not that I'm bitter, but the fact is that I'm friends with a lot of writers who have made a great deal of money, and I mostly am not jealous of them. It's so funny, but I'm so relieved to be a writer. I was raised by a writer, and I was taught that it was a great privilege to be one of the writers in a culture. But every so often, someone will come along, and they will make me crazier than a loon because of what they drop into the conversation. And for instance, I really never just sit down at the typewriter and push back my sleeves and sit there typing away as if I'm taking dictation. It's always a struggle for me. And I had this one friend who wrote a book that I think did too well, but I thought it oversold, for instance. And Sam and I went to stay with her and her family once down in Southern California, and she'd get up very early and go to the desk and then leave her study when we all came down for breakfast. And I would say, prettily, "Well, how did it go today?" And she'd say, "Oh, it was really incredible." Like she'd been in her study having scones with Jesus or something. And I would just get apoplectic. And I finally had to cut her off. I decided I wasn't remotely well enough to be friends with her. But I think it's an occupational hazard of writers.
Anne Lamott is my guest, and she's written a new book about writing called Bird by Bird, Some Instructions on Writing and Life. Anne, let's take a short break, and then we'll talk some more.
Okay.
This is Fresh Air. Back with writer Anne Lamott, and her new book is about writing. She teaches writing, and her new book is filled with advice about writing. It's called Bird by Bird, Some Instructions on Writing and Life. You used to drink, and then you gave that up. What did writing do for your confidence? I'm sorry, what did drinking do for your confidence?
Drinking never helped me much as a writer, although it helped me survive a lot of nights where I felt extremely lonely and bored and misunderstood. It helped me numb the pain of that. But I woke up almost every morning for years with these hangovers that were so bad that I literally felt pinned to the bed by centrifugal force, and I would feel that there was no point trying to sit up because I was going to get slammed back to the bed. But I was young enough so that I could get up, have some coffee, take a hot shower, go for a run, have some more coffee and sit down and work. So I think it's a great myth of this culture that writing and drinking go hand in hand. And I became a much better writer when I stopped drinking. First of all, I felt like my windows really got washed. And as soon as I felt that my windows were washed, I started learning to really pay attention. And writing is about learning how to pay attention.
Your father was a writer. What kind of writing mm-hmm. did he do?
My father wrote a lot of books of nonfiction. He wrote one book called The Moneymakers or The Great Big New Rich in America. He wrote four novels. He wrote a lot for The New York Times and for West Magazine and Esquire. He was a freelance writer.
What was his full name?
Kenneth Lamott.
So growing up with a father who wrote, what were your ideas about a writer's life?
Well, there really was a long period in my life where I thought my father was mentally ill and couldn't hold down a job because he would just sit in his study every day and type. And the only other father in the neighborhood who didn't go to work had a massive nervous breakdown, and he painted on black velvet, and I couldn't see much of a difference. And I very, very much wanted my father to leave the house every morning and wear hard shoes. I thought if he would just wear hard shoes and leave the house every morning, we'd be functioning better. But every single morning at 5:30, he went into his study and he got his work done. And so he taught me a lot about showing up even when you don't want to, even when you're tired, even if you've been up too late the night before, even if you've gotten bad news the afternoon before. And he taught me that you do it as a debt of honor. If you feel this creative thing inside of you that wants out, you honor it. He taught me that you do it by prearrangement with yourself and that you don't say, "Well, I hope I can get a couple hours of work done tomorrow." That instead you say, "I'm going to get a couple hours of work done between these hours and everything else can fit in around that." He taught me that you can write 300 words a day and that it will add up to something. 300 words a day is a page. And if you write a page a day and taking time off for holidays and PMS, that's probably 275 pages a year, which is a novel. He taught me that when you don't know what else to do, you just start getting down your memories. And it's like Flannery O'Connor said, that anyone who survived childhood has enough material to write for the rest of your life. And he taught me that you just sit down and you do your scales every day.
One of the real mysteries about writing is that very few people claim to enjoy the process of writing, yet so many people want to write.
Yes, and so many people want to be published. I show up on my first class of every 10-week session, and I give this wonderful, rousing pep talk on writing and how important it is that people who want to write get to work and that they find their own voice and that they learn to write awful first drafts and that they learn to write short assignments and that they learn to break through the perfectionism and that they have the right to be writers and that it will greatly increase their sense of life and of the mysteriousness of it all, and that it'll help them learn to pay attention. And there's always a silence when I'm done, and then someone will raise their hand and say, but how do you find an agent? And are manuscripts supposed to have your name at the top of every single page? And then I kind of put my head down on the table and I say, no, I don't think they need to. But it's very hard, and a lot of people felt that they were silenced as children and that they were told not to talk about what was going on in their homes between their parents, and that if they did tell the truth about what was happening, that the long, bony, white finger would come out of the sky pointing at them and say, we told you not to tell. And I tell them they have the right to tell the truth, and that all that they survived belongs to them, and that they may be able to free someone else by telling their story, and that they're probably going to sit down and have a tremendous amount to say, and that they're going to almost immediately find themselves in writer's block, but that that there are ways through it. You know, there's a great line of E.L. Doctorow's, one of the best pieces of advice about writing I've ever heard, that writing is like driving at night with the headlights on, when you can only see 2 or 3 feet in front of you, but you can make the whole journey that way. And so I try to help them just start biting off really, really small pieces of the whole, and to just work on making fragment by fragment alive and true as they can make it, and that there's a lot to be noticed and paid attention to in the world, that there's a lot that they've survived, that it's interesting, that their version of things is of value, that what they think about the night sky is important. And then, of course, I'm finished with that, and someone else will raise their hand and say, do you really need an agent, though, or can you send your manuscript directly to the publisher?
Yeah. Do you ever have writer's block?
Do I ever have writer's block? Boy, have I had writer's block over the years. But I finally realized that the words writer's block is the wrong metaphor, that you're not blocked up, that you're not stuck, that it's coming at the problem from the wrong direction, and that if your wife locks you out of the house, you're not having a problem with the door, and that the real problem is that you're empty and that you need to begin filling up. I still urge people, when they're in a period of being stuck, as I often am, to just do 300 words. That's one page, even if it's completely unusable, because it keeps their fingers from getting too arthritic. But then I convince them to go out into the world and into real life and to just fill up on all the visual images and all of the things that are going on before them, and to put a new pair of glasses on and to go look at things and strive for some sense of freshness, and to pay better attention in the checkout line at Safeway, and to go everywhere like a ship's rat with their veined ears trembling, and to just fill up and fill up and fill up. And pretty soon some steam will begin to build up in the pressure cooker again, and they can sit down and plunge into a really awful first draft. And I think then that you find that you're off and running again.
So do you have to get back to the computer after we talk?
Oh, no, please.
You're free for the day now?
I'm done.
What's your writing time?
I sit down at the same time every single day, because I think that it helps your subconscious to kick in for you. I start at 9:30 every single morning, and I write till about 1:30. So I budget 4 hours to try to get 2.5 hours done, because I have to do all that work with with the orthodontia and the moles and the phone calls that suddenly have to be made. But I do sit down at the same time every single morning.
Well, Annie, thanks a lot for talking with us.
Yeah, thank you, Terry.
Anne Lamott is the author of Bird by Bird, Some Instructions on Writing and Life. Our interview was first broadcast last January. This is Fresh Air.